Hey, this is Scott Love, and joining me is Nakia Gray, Executive Director of NALP, for another episode of NALP Talk. Nakia, welcome to the show again.
Thanks, Scott. It's great to be here.
It's great to see you, and it's great to talk about the Member Value Assessment Task Force on this show. But first, before we get to that, tell us about some of the upcoming calendar items that people should be aware of, Nakia.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. So there's a couple of things I'd mention for folks. First of all, NALP has a call for proposals open for this year's annual education conference, which is going to be in Hollywood, Florida on April 14th through 17th. We accept proposals from both members and non-members, so it's a great way for folks to share their expertise and get their name out in the industry. And I'll add for our members, if someone would like to present on a topic, but perhaps, you know, doesn't want to present alone and doesn't know who to ask, using NALP Connect and posting their idea on NALP Connect is a great way for them to meet new people and just make connections in the industry. So we have a lot of folks who find co-speakers that way. So I encourage members to do that.
That's great. That takes the pressure off, doesn't it, when you sit on a panel?
It does. It does. It makes it just a little bit easier. And in particular, if you're a first-time presenter, it can take away some of those jitters to have a buddy with you.
That's right.
So we also have a couple of upcoming webinars that I want to make everyone aware of. On June 12th, we have a great webinar from Anne Gomez on the power of focus. And so for those members who feel stretched too thin and maybe pulled in multiple directions, which I think is probably all of us these days, this is the webinar for them. And then on July 31st, Danielle Taylor and I will be presenting our selective findings on the employment outcomes for the class of 2024. So we'll talk about how that class did, how it compares to recent classes, and what trends we're seeing for future graduates. So definitely not a session to miss. And members can register for both of those through the NALP website.
That's great. Thank you, Nakia. And now we're going to talk about the Member Value Assessment Task Force. And you'll be hearing me interview Andy Hale, who's been with Venable almost 20 years. He's the Vice President of Professional Development and Training, talking about his journey in helping NALP with that task force. And Nakia, tell me, what is a task force like this, and why is it important, and how can people get involved?
Yeah, thanks, Scott. It's task forces are really unique parts of NALP and really important part of NALP. They are groups that are designated by our president in the president's business plan to complete a discrete strategic project, right? In prior years, we've had task forces that were charged with doing things like creating resources to support specific groups of lawyers or students or to address particular issues. We've also had task forces that looked at governance issues for NALP. And right now we have one helping us create credentialing programs, right, that we're looking forward to launching in the near future. So they do a lot of these special projects for us here at NALP. And typically a task force will be in place for a year, possibly two. It depends how long it takes them to complete their projects, and then they're sunsetted at the end of the project. The members of these task forces are appointed by our president. Members can indicate their interest in participating in one by responding to the call for volunteers. Each year when we put that out, the incoming president will take a look at it and think about what skills they need for whatever task forces they're thinking of having that year. And they'll put a request for people to indicate whether they have skills in those areas or interests in those areas. And so folks who are responding to the call for volunteers can indicate their interest. And that's how our president identifies folks. And then, of course, you can always reach out to the new president. So if members right now are interested in serving on a task force, I encourage them to respond to the call for volunteers this fall or to let our incoming president, Mike Endy, know that they have an interest.
That's terrific. Thank you for sharing that, Nakia. And we're going to go a little bit deeper with Andy talking about the benefits of working on these task force. Thanks for joining us, Nakia. And now here's my conversation with Andy Hale.
Thanks, Scott.
Hey, this is Scott Love with NALP Talk. Our special guest today is Andy Hales, Vice President, Professional Development and Training at Venable. Andy was the co-chair of the Member Value Assessment Task Force during the last NALP business cycle. And we want Andy to talk about his group's projects and outcomes. Andy, thank you for joining me on NALP Talk today.
Sure, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so tell our listeners, what is a task force? What is it that you all did?
Well, task forces are created by the incoming NALP president. Every NALP president has their own business plan, and they develop different task forces or a type of work group to carry out specific projects. And typically, a task force will last for a year or two and then conclude and wrap up whenever they're finished with whatever the business plan task was. And the president appoints members of task forces. But in the annual call for volunteers, which usually comes out in, I would say, the winter time, members can indicate if they're interested in any special projects, such as a task force, and the president will take that into consideration, and they'll appoint a chair or co-chairs and fill it out with members who are interested in certain areas, like me.
That's great. And so your task force was focused on member values. What does that mean exactly?
So it's funny, we were talking about values, big V versus little V, right? And there's, coincidentally, NALP had put together some focus groups last summer asking people about what they value in NALP. What do they value specifically? Like, I value the member conference. I value the Friday emails. I value all of these tangible things. We were taking a look at what I'll call the big V, which is, what are your personal and professional values intrinsically as an individual? And does that change in various stages of your career? And whether or not and how what you personally value, is that represented in NALP? And so our task force sought to try to figure that out, how members derive value from NALP, and how does that relate to what they personally and professionally value themselves?
That's great. Did you have any personal theories on member values as you went into it?
You know, I didn't know what to think. I'm certainly biased by my own values. I value relationships. I value interesting work. But I did suspect, you know, we work so much with people across different generations, especially with what I do. You know, I have new associates who are recently graduated from law school all the way up to the most senior partner. And I do see that people behave in different ways and people seem to, you know, value in their work at least different things. And so I suspected we would find some differences. Didn't know what those would look like other than, you know, maybe people who are newer to the workforce might enjoying a little bit more flexibility or autonomy or whatever. And people who've been around like myself really valuing relationships or mentoring or learning or other things. But it was interesting to try and crack that nut for sure.
Yeah, that's great. How many people were on your task force?
Great question. About 10.
That's great. Not too big. Enough people to get the job done, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I had a terrific co-chair, Gwendolyn Farrell. She works at Louisiana State University Hollar Bear Law Center. I'm obviously from the law firm side. She's from the law school side. And like I said, we had 10 or so other people from NALP, real NALP luminaries, to be honest, people who've been members for a long, long time, and a good mix of people who represent that law school side and people who represent the employer side like myself.
And so did you intentionally go out to, we want to have X percentage representing schools, X percentage representing recruiting or training and development? How did that play out in terms of how you put the committee together?
Well, I didn't put the committee together. That was the president's job. And so they had, I looked at, you know, what do I want to accomplish out of my business plan? And we'll put together this task force plus all the others. But I think it's pretty common to have a pretty good balance because the NALP membership represents all these different aspects and different perspectives to have a well-rounded out task force.
That's great. And so how did you go about approaching the project? And I also want to hear about the business plan that you mentioned as well.
Okay. So this was new to all of us. Where we landed was what I'll describe as a three-step process. We had, first of all, we called for volunteers. We got 165 volunteers, which was great. That took some persuasion, which I'll come back to in a minute, but we ended with 165 different volunteers, and we put them in cohorts. And the cohorts of these volunteers were based on how many years of post-college professional experience they have. And so we grouped people into, they're 0 to 5 years out of college, 6 to 10 years, 11 to 20 years, and more than 20 years. And we went to regional meetings. We went to section meetings. We did some email outreach. We tried to pull out all the stops. And we very quickly filled up cohorts for the more senior sets, the 11 to 20 years of post-college experience and 20 plus years of post-college experience. And we had to go through some several rounds of recruiting for some of the newer professionals, which was something that we learned a lot about. And I'll talk about that. I'll talk about that again later. But once we had these volunteers, the first step was to have them on their own take a values sorting exercise. And we found this free website, which was perfect for our purposes. And if you can imagine a deck of cards with a value on them and a short definition, and the online tool would have you sort these cards virtually. And so you'd look at all these different cards and you would sort them into a keep pile and a discard pile. And you would keep on sorting your cards until you narrowed down your top five values. It would sort of like a solitaire game. It would just keep spitting the values back out to you. And you would keep on sorting them until you had five. And we asked people to hold on to those top five values and come to a focus group, which one of our task force members would facilitate. And so that was step one. Step two was to conduct a focus group. We all had a discussion guide or a script, and we had a representation of all the 50 cards up on the screen. And Zoom has a neat little feature called Annotate. I don't know if you've ever used it before. Yeah. It's pretty cool. It allows Zoom participants to scribble or stamp or do something on the screen so that everybody can see it. And we would ask the focus group members, these participants, to stamp their top five values. And we would see what we see. A typical focus group, we had a bunch of them. We tried to keep it to maybe 10 to 15 was a good sweet spot for the number of NALP members in a group. Some of them had more. Some of them had close to 20. And we would ask them to stamp, what were your top five values? And we would see emerge in real time before us clusters of values. And so out of a group of 15, 7, 8, 9 people would stamp the same value, which was out of 52 cards. To have people, you know, in some cases, a third or a half, in probably the biggest instances, of the people in the group choosing the same value was really, really interesting.
So can you give me an example? What were some of the values? So listeners can kind of put it in their mind. Oh, this is what they were. What were some examples of those?
Okay, great. Great question. We've got achievement, adventure, change, community, competition, cooperation, flexibility, meaningful work, philanthropy, play, pleasure, privacy, service, spirituality, wealth, fairness. These are just some examples. There were 52 of them. And like I said, they all came with their top five. They had sorted it in advance and they came with their top five.
That's great. So what surprised you the most with this whole project?
I would say what surprised me the most was how much people actually had in common with their values in these different cohorts. One of the things that we discovered that was when it comes to values, these different generations, you know, these different cohorts of 0 to 5, 6 to 10, 11 to 20 and 20 plus, they all had several values in common. So all four cohorts reported happiness and health in their top five personal values. And happiness, they said, you know, because we asked people when there were so many people stamping the same value, we would ask them, like, someone who chose happiness, tell us more about that. How does that show up for you? And so happiness in particular, they said they want to make people around them happy. You know, we're service providers, we serve students, or we serve the lawyers. And they also felt that happiness was something that encompasses many of the other values. And so maybe like work makes me happy or play makes me happy. And so this idea of this exercise, I should say, of looking at all the values, people, in every single focus group, people commented about how there were different umbrella categories, and happiness was one of them. Relationships was another one. And so, for example, there were values of friends, family, you know, maybe coworkers. Well, when it got down to, I can only choose five, they would choose an umbrella one, like relationships, to make sure that they, you know, that they could encompass all of these different things. So anyway, happiness was one, health was one that all four cohorts had in common. And then the three most experienced cohorts, the people had 6 or more years of experience, and that's a lot of people. They had integrity, family, or relationships in their top five value.
Interesting. Yeah. So when you wrote the business plan, was it part of your plan to have this process, or did you revise it as you went forward? Tell me how you created the plan and what changes did you make as you started executing on the project?
Well, it was an iterative process to come up with how we were going to approach this. The charge came from the president, Rebecca Kalman. She wrote the business plan. And so all of her task forces and work groups were going to achieve, you know, what she wanted to accomplish. What is her objective as a president? And that this was one of the things that she was keenly interested in. And she appointed me and Gwendolyn to be co-chairs of it, and then sort of left it to us to, you know, here you go. Here's what we want to find out. And how we do that, she gave us the creativity, the, you know, we could do the thinking on how we wanted to accomplish that. And so
that's great.
Yeah. Lucky for us, this card sorting exercise worked out really well.
Kind of made it easy and fun, I'm sure, for the people involved in that. And so what did you learn from this process? Something that you didn't know before?
Well, something that I learned, I won't say I didn't know this already, but something that was harder than I expected was getting the newest professionals engaged. And so I think I mentioned when we first did our call for volunteers, we were immediately flooded with volunteers who have 11 to 20 years experience and 20 plus years experience. We quickly filled our focus groups with those people. Those are my people, right? I've been at my firm for 20 years. And so we're NALP nerds. We love this stuff. And like, we hear of something cool like this, we jump on it. But after a month of trying to get volunteers from the 0 to 5 group, we had 7. 7 people after a month had volunteered. And interestingly, those groups received the most attention from us. So, like I said, we had gone to the newer professional section meetings, and I had the roster of all of the attendees of the NALP Newer Professionals Forum, which is hundreds of people. And I emailed all of them. And to only get 7 out of that group was really surprising to me. And so I called in some favors and asked people, like, can you make your youngest people do this, right? Can you really encourage them to sign up? And we filled out our group, and I went off script a little bit in the focus group and just pointedly asked them, you know, what was it about this that, what do you think, newer professionals? What do you think are some reasons people didn't sign up for this? And I got some, you know, some good insight. For example, they were very vulnerable in telling me about this. And they told me that they didn't really understand their, what I'll put in air quotes, their place. They didn't know if they would be allowed to do something like this. They thought, some people shared about imposter syndrome and, you know, especially early on, not really knowing, you know, am I allowed to sign up for something like this? I'm so focused on my task. I'm an assistant at my workplace, or I'm a coordinator at my workplace, and I get direction from somebody, and nobody really had given me direction or instruction to do this. And I didn't know if it would be appropriate for me to spend the time of my job in doing something that's extracurricular. And so they didn't sign up for it. And then they also see NALP as very conceptual. You know, they don't volunteer a whole lot yet. And so it was a little overwhelming to some people to, you know, lean in and do something like this. And so that was really good insight and important for NALP to know and for us to know, because there are some things that we can do to get that group a little bit more involved.
Absolutely right. It's almost like that's a side benefit that you got from this that can really get people engaged. When once people engage, once they're more committed to something. And I also think that's just a brilliant idea that Rebecca Coleman had about really focusing on values, because that's where every high functioning organization should start. What are the values of that organization? And really getting that information from the constituents, I think that's great. How do you think those people who volunteered their time in doing this, how do you think they benefited by being a participant in this process?
So we got a lot of really encouraging feedback. So I mentioned this three-part process, part one being the sorting of the cards, part two being the focus group. I didn't mention part three yet, which was a follow-up survey. And so immediately after the focus group ended, we would send them a SurveyMonkey. What we were looking to do really was just make sure we capture everybody's values. We knew that in a one-hour focus group, maybe not everybody could say what was on their mind or felt comfortable saying what was on their mind. And so we really wanted to capture what were your top five values, personal and professional. And then second, you know, how does that show up in NALP, you know, and any other comments? Well, we got all of that really good data, but we also got a lot of meaningful comments about the exercise itself. And so people used words like, this was so refreshing, this was so insightful. And the punchline being that it's good for us to reflect on our values every now and then, especially our professional values. They do change. What we discovered through this whole process was that they do change, and that early on in your career, you might be motivated or you might value recognition and achievement early on. And in the later years of your career, you might value more relationships and meaningful work and ethics and integrity later on. And so it's good to take stock for all of us at various stages of in our career and think about, what am I drawn to? What are my values? And are those things aligned with my current role or employer or industry or whatever? And if they're not, what changes can I make, big or small, to make sure I have better alignment with my values? Because presumably, if I have alignment with my values, I'm happier and I'm more fulfilled.
That's great wisdom. And thank you for sharing that, Andy. You've given us a lot of takeaways here. What do you think is the most important, the most impacting takeaway that you got from this whole exercise? If there's one thing you'd like to leave our listeners with, what would that be?
Well, that healthy exercise, I think we should all do it. And then second, NALP plays a significant role in the professional lives of its members. And so NALP fosters community and relationship building, and it offers skills development, and it does so in all the different ways that appeal to people at different stages in their career. And so I think, you know, to our listeners, continue to lean into NALP, support NALP. And it's also on us to that, you know, that challenge that we had to get some of the newer professionals involved. It's on us as more experienced members to guide and encourage and, you know, explain to our more junior members why this is all important and let them know it's okay, that there's something there for you and you'll get a lot out of it and it's okay. And we encourage you to do it. A little bit of encouragement, I think, will go a long way.
That's great, Andy. And how do you think somebody goes about getting on a task force? If this is something what you describe, they say, I want to make a contribution because I see the benefit from it. How do you think they can go about getting on a task force?
So great question. You can start small by just joining different sections. And so there's the newer professional section, recruiting section, lawyer professional development section. There's various diversity sections and so on. They hold meetings and calls, and just getting involved at that level is great because they'll have their own versions of committees and work groups. And then for the bigger one, the business plan, there is that formal call for volunteers, which happens in the winter as the new incoming president is thinking about their objectives and their business plan. They'll go through the same cycle. And so answer the call for sure. Think about, what do you have to offer? What are you interested in? If it's nothing, if it's I'm open to anything, that's okay too. But just, you know, get yourself on the list, because the president's going to be pulling from that and wants to get people involved who want to be.
That's terrific. Andy, thank you for being on the show on NALP Talk today. And thanks for sharing the work you did on the task force. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. My pleasure.